All right, welcome to our 2014, I got that right, podcast, first of the year. It's good to be back from holiday break, I guess. It's our
one year anniversary.
We started huzzah. 1 year in January. Did we do the beginning or to the end of the January or
something? Yeah, like that? I think it was the first Sunday.
Yeah, it was the beginning, yep.
All right, well, we got a couple things we want to talk about today. We're going to lead it off first with our 3D printer.
Yep.
We're just going to have a quick discussion about some things around 3D printing and what it involves, and then we're going to go into some topics around Final Cut Pro and editing in general that Wade wants to discuss. And then we're going to talk about some of the movies from 2013 and specifically The Hobbit that we watched together in December. Except for Wade, kind of, that showed up halfway through.
That's another funny story because you went to the wrong seat. Yeah.
That's true.
Well, but to be fair, it was also the maitre d's fault too. He pointed you to the wrong one. But anyway, we can talk about that later.
So we have a 3D printer that Lee built named the Proxima. We've been trying to get it dialed in. Lee's been trying to get it dialed in the last few weeks, and I was wondering. We have some difficulties with what we're able to print. Because when I think about 3D printing, I think about basically anything you can design, you can make. Mm-hmm. But obviously there's some limitations, and I thought you could touch on that.
Yeah, so I think for me, a hard part is the design of the object. Because you're going layer by layer, you're basing the layer on the previous layer. So it has difficult with like overhangs. So anything that
cantilevers,
like you're going up vertically and then you take a 90 degree outward. If you do that, there's nothing to print on, and you're just printing in space. So it's just going to fall down to the ground.
So do you build foundations?
Yeah. So generally you build supports that will print up with the model that you can break off later, but that can, you know, cause issues breaking it off, and then you get uneven surfaces if you can't, but you know, you could probably sand that off. So there's difficulties with that. I think most of the difficulties that I've been having is just generally, you know, because it's home built, so it has some tinkering. There's a lot of moving parts. You know, it's a three-axis machine, so you got X, Y, and Z that you got to worry about, and then also the one thing I'm dealing with now is leveling the bed. Because you need the distance from the bed to the printhead to be even throughout the bed, so right now I'm having difficulties where the flow of the melted plastic is getting kind of bunched up into the head because there's not quite enough space.
So it has to be very precise.
Yeah, so there's like the flow rate, you know, the gear is pushing the plastic, so if it's pushing too fast where it can't melt it, because you're melting it at a certain temperature too. So there's a lot of different moving parts.
Another thing that we ran into initially was the plastic was staying too hot after it was coming out of the head, and it was kind of falling away.
Yeah, so generally you have a fan on the print head that's blowing on the plastic, and the one that we got, figured out we hooked it up wrong and it blew the circuitry on the fan because it was plugged in the wrong way. And so we had to find one, and the one I found was a little too big because we just went to like a surplus store and picked one up and didn't get the size quite right, and so I had to spend a couple hours trying to hook that up. And right now it's just kind of jimmy-rigged, but it works pretty well right now, and that helps a lot. After it does the first layer, the fan turns on and starts cooling the previous layer, so it can easily attach itself and the head doesn't move the plastic, stuff like that.
Do you have, when you design these models to build these objects, do you print it so it's hollow with like support structures in the middle, or do you do it solid all the way through? How does that kind of work?
Depends what you're trying to do. You can, as long as for the printing, you need the shapes, the 3D models, to be solid, so watertight, they call it.
Right.
So there can't be any holes, otherwise it can't figure out the slicing properly. And then the program itself from the printer that you use to print, it automatically figures out, you can do fill density, and it'll do a lattice structure throughout the inside.
Okay.
To create a support structure inside of it, and you can change that depending on what you want.
And can you do like, I'm assuming you can do curves. The object that you made for me was kind of
mm-hmm.
structure, rigid. It wasn't curved at all. But you can do it pretty much any curved yeah. shape. Okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, curves are a lot better if you're, let's say, going out at a 45 degree angle upwards.
Okay.
The previous layer has, you know, that like half of it to print on. So in that situation, you know, you might not need a support structure for it to self, because it has a little bit of its previous self to build upon to kind of go outwards.
Cool. What kind of stuff? Yeah. What kind of stuff have you built thus far? Because for me, you built that Zelda little spiritual stone.
Yeah, most of it's just kind of been test little objects that I've found. What did I print you?
You can build David? Me a companion oh, yeah. cube
oh, that's
from
right.
from Portal, which is one of my little desk doodads that I have in my desk in my office.
I love at the end of Portal 2 how she throws it out at you.
Yeah, it survived. Yeah. You didn't really kill it. Such a happy moment.
I printed off for my wife this little turtle thing that's pretty cool that it's able to print the joints within itself because it goes by layer by
that
layer.
That was cool, yeah.
So the ball joints are inside the model so that the fins on the, it's a sea turtle, can move.
Mm-hmm.
And those are just from
Thingiverse, right?
Thingiverse, and then the Altimaker people, they have their own website called Uimagine. I want to call it Uimagine, but it's Imagine without the I with U.
Oh.
So I don't know how you say that.
Okay.
Just a little. I did print off a little when I was trying to get it back up and running because we had a problem with the bed. I printed off a little miniature guy, Daft Punk helmet.
Oh, cool! I got to take a look at that.
Yeah.
I also saw you did a little Halo Magnum, which was
oh, yeah.
which turned out really good. That must have been before something went wrong.
Yeah, that was before something went wrong. That was when we were trying to do the fan. We had a like. They have a couple problems with their software from Altimaker that they need to fix. Like, they don't have any like diagnostic mode where you can just say turn on the fan without printing. So the only way to like turn on the fan to test it was to print.
Mm-hmm.
But therefore we needed to get access to the electronics, which is on the bottom. So we had to like the printer at a 45 degree angle was trying to print, and it like stalled, and the heat of the head melted because it's just a plexiglass or something in the bed that I have right now, so it like made a hole in it. And so I had to flip it around and stuff like that, so it took a little bit.
Yikes. Well, cool. And it's a really kind of a high resolution printer too, right? The lines are small and really close together.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. It has a pretty default 0.4 millimeter nozzle, so it that's how small the lines it can print.
Yeah. So when you say resolution, is that comparable to the resolution on a screen, like in pixels, or
pretty,
is it just
pretty much
the density?
No, you're talking about basically the layers it prints at.
Sure.
And so the problem though is if you want to print with more layers, so you get more detail in the curves, you're going to greatly increase the time it takes to print.
Mm.
And so sometimes it's not worth it to spend a week printing something that's a little cube or something,
right?
Just to,
but if it's something that smoother. We want to make a mold out of,
yeah,
then it would.
Oh, and make even more and sense. Even for that, there are other options. There are other things. There's a website called Tested.com, and they have a 3D printer and they print stuff with it all the time. Excuse me. And one of the things that they do is they, after it's been printed, they put it in a beaker with, I don't remember what. Acetone, and they heat it very, very lightly.
It's like 90 degrees.
Yeah, something. Yeah, you know, it's pretty cool by all thing. All
it just vaporizes it, just enough to vaporize.
Yeah, and
it.
So, but doing that, it barely just partially melts the outermost layer of plastic, making it smooth.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So there are other options of there are other ways to make your model smooth. Like, congrats, you have to be careful with that. If you keep it in too long, it will start to destroy the model.
I was going to say, does that give a consistent smooth surface if it melts?
It does by judging by
it
the,
does. Yeah, it depends on. They had some problems with like you got to like suspend it in a.
It's like up on blocks basically,
And then that, you know, because it does, if you do it too long, it starts to droop, starts to, you know, melt on the edges, yeah. So it can, like, deform it a little bit.
But yeah, it's a fine science to,
yeah.
To
we'll probably do a lot more work with, like, sanding and adding in, not Bondo, but the, it's like, maybe like epoxy sculpt or easily sand away stuff that can just kind of fill in the cracks a little bit.
Gotcha.
Make it smooth.
Cool. Yeah. All right. That's all I had for Proxima questions. We have a camera set up on a reconfigured C-stand, a GoPro.
Yeah, we're going to try to do a time lapse.
I'm not going to say what we're printing.
Yes, that's right.
Because I tried to give it away last time.
Yeah. And though that's not, it's not a C-stand, that thing. It's what it is. It's two Cardellini clamps, if anyone in film knows what those are. It's a special kind of clamp. And a baby pin extender.
Love this guy.
Yeah. So that's what we have. We have that mounted to the desk. And it looks really cool, the shot. Hopefully we'll be able to get that printing when we're done recording here.
Yep, the mystery item.
Do a nice time lapse of that.
Cool. Well, another thing that I wanted to touch on is the new version of Final Cut Pro 10.1 that was just released. I myself edit on both Premiere and Final Cut Pro between different jobs, so I've become familiar with both workflows. And the thing that really appealed to me with this update is, I've basically been learning the program since it came out. It is essentially a new program than Final Cut Pro 7. It
came out 1 year ago, right?
Actually,
two years ago.
Well, 2.5 years ago. It was
really
June of 2011.
Oh, but it's been a while.
And this is a really big update. It makes media management a lot easier, and it does a lot of cool stuff under the hood.
I'm really glad they got rid of the events and libraries into one.
Yeah, that was a pain to deal with.
Oh, the projects and events. They still have them, but it's restructured so it's bundled together, and it's really nice, and I'll show you guys that in a bit. So basically, what I wanted to do is finally give this program the attention it deserved, and we went ahead and purchased this in-depth tutorial from the guys at fcp.tv or .co or something like that. They're like the best guys to go to for all things Final Cut. They're part of a group called Ripple Training, and they do like tutorials on all applications for editing, color correcting, compositing, anything. And anyway, so I watched that, and there's a lot of awesome stuff under the hood going on with this program, and things that I didn't learn about or didn't even know about, and I've been using it for years. So it's great. And so what I wanted to touch on is the change in workflow over the last 10-15 years about how professionals do video and film projects. I went back and I looked at a couple old articles for previous versions of Final Cut Pro, and it's really clear if you look at the interface and how it was put together, how it's trying to take a bite of the professional, the programs that were costing tens of thousands of dollars that the professional filmmakers were using, and they wanted to borrow from that interface. And it's clearly like tape based, film based, and it's really funny because we're moving beyond that now. The revolution is finally happening with digital workflow, especially for indie filmmakers. And so I think one of the things that turned people off from Final Cut Pro is Final Cut Pro 10 is it doesn't have that tape based workflow. They certainly did away with tracks, which a lot of people didn't like. But looking back on the older versions, it just made me kind of recoil a little bit. It doesn't appeal to me anymore. And it's just kind of funny how that changed in my head with using Final Cut Pro 10. I don't know if you guys have edited as much as me, or if you guys feel the same way.
Oh yes, I have. Oh yes. I'm totally there and agree with you, because when I learned in high school and I first did editing, that wasn't you know with like Movie Maker or whatever.
Yeah.
When I first learned, I learned on Avid, and I was very much a PC person in high school. In my senior year of high school, I would always bend about PC. I hated Macs. And when I look back on it, the main reason I hated them is there was no right click, and that really irked me for some reason. So whatever, but you know, so
change.
It irked me too. I didn't
No, and well, do you think that the whole not, well, back when Macs just had one button, do you think that that is kind of analogous to Mac's whole system of thought? Hey, you don't need any more options. You just need this one option. It's good enough for you.
Yeah,
well, but it's still there.
It's not about not giving you options. It's about giving you an experience that you can trust and rely on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what Steve was about, is giving people, like, this is what you need to do what.
Yeah, exactly.
What is good.
Yeah.
And well, anyway, so like I hated Macs, and you know, I was dead set on Avid. And also, for the record, this was when Dell was a good company and you could trust what you buy from them. I had picked out my Dell laptop and I had it all set up for what I wanted and spec'd out to run Avid. And I was saving because Avid was about a $22,000 program. Or so, I think.
Something like that.
And I was all set up to save up for it and everything. And my teacher at the time says, hey, can I show you a little bit of Final Cut? I'm like, what? That's not a Mac. Why would the hell would I want that?
What year is this?
This is senior year. So this would be 2008.
2008. Okay.
So I'm like, fine, whatever. You're not going to change my mind. So he sat me down, and the first thing he showed me was how to do picture in picture, because that's one thing I tried to do in Avid, and it's really, really complicated. And it's like three seconds, like switch on wireframe, reframe, done. Like, mm-hmm. Well, fuck PCs. I'm gonna go with Macs from now on.
Yeah,
and that was my change. And just like even that change, looking at Avid of 2008 Avid versus Final Cut, I believe would have been 6 at the time. Mm-hmm. Final Cut 6. That change, you can see where Apple is preparing and making things easier and better to work with. And you know, you can see that progression when you look into Final Cut Pro 7. And the way it builds on there, and then you know, obviously this huge, huge change now that it's gone to X 10.
I feel like that was a big heyday for professionals using Final Cut Pro back when Final Cut Studio was a big thing.
Yeah, that's what I miss the most. I miss Studio.
I really think a lot of people are turned off that they discontinued that service. I think one of the
could you explain Studio?
Final Cut Studio is it's like the Adobe Creative Suite. It's a big bundle of software. Okay. So you have Final Cut Pro, you have Motion, you have Compressor, which are still there. But then you also had Soundtrack Pro and Color.
Those are the two I miss the most. Soundtrack.
Yeah,
Pro
and DVD and Studio and Pro.
Okay.
The justification there is Apple was saying we can combine Soundtrack Pro and Color and put it into Final Cut Pro. It's not the same, obviously. They simplified a lot of things. And they got rid of DVD Studio Pro because they're dropping DVDs entirely. Mm-hmm. No surprise. So and they discontinued Shake, which was a big compositing application. That was comparable to After Effects, similar. Node-based editor, so it's different, but it did some of the same things that After Effects does. So I think one of the big advantages that Adobe has is they have this grand suite, and they all the programs work well together. Photoshop works great with Premiere and After Effects, and they all...
So the problem with Apple is they're not really a software company. At heart, they're still a hardware company, for me at least. Mm. And they did switch, you know, to the prosumer, which you could say I am right now. You know, I'd like to be professional, but there it's when you look at like money wise if you're selling a 7,000 program to 10 professionals, because that's all the professionals that exist in the field that are using it, versus a $200 program for thousands of prosumers, you know, that's kind of, to me, that's what they're kind of targeting. And but then people are so relying on it, and they're like, we don't want to go to Avid or Premiere. We want to use Final Cut. So I think they have been doing well with doing these updates and like saying, okay, we're going to try to support you guys more in the professional world.
Yeah. And I will say that's where a lot of Apple apps I like a lot. And though I've found a lot of the times their hardware decisions are like 100% correct, practically 99% correct. When they decided to cut the floppy disk drive, back in the day, when they decided to cut DVD drives, they've been right. Mm-hmm. From what it appeared, the trends seem to be the correct decisions.
Well, would you say that they're trend makers, though? I mean, they were the ones who started that, and so people followed.
No, I don't think so. No, they're affecting. There's so much more. Like as big as Apple is, like when you look at the plethora of people that use
Well, look
printed
at,
media like
look at like
discs.
Blu-ray, like they haven't really
Yeah, like blues haven't caught like the
even though it's on. Really popular, they still haven't.
Yeah,
yeah, and but so my point being, like with hardware stuff, they've been spot on, like with pretty much every single decision, they've been pretty much correct. I've noticed with software, they've gotten more backlash from it, that like they'll release something and like look at Final Cut Pro X. When that came out, like there was all this stuff that was missing that wasn't 7 but was no longer an X. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's like freaking out, like, why did you cut this out? And they're like, oh, okay, we'll put it back in later. And you know, there may have been other issues and like maybe they mm-hmm. wasn't ready to be released in that first push.
But
and
I think for us with like what Wade was talking about is some of their decisions or changes that they made, we don't understand or like didn't take the time to like figure out why, like ask the question yeah. why they changed it instead of that, oh, it's not there, well what is there that is comparable or is there just not on the
some
front?
Some things weren't there that I think probably should have been, for example, that they have now.
Yeah.
Like XML exporting, multi-cam clip wasn't in originally, so
or just were just things. Even like I hated exporting, like just I just want to say export and then show me all the settings that I can
yeah.
manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
Like what if it's resolution or like I don't want to go to share and say give me like four options, that's YouTube, Facebook,
right?
Apple devices, 720p, like
yeah, yeah.
I wish I could still move the windows around, like instead of it being all in one like restricted yeah. box, like with my previous setup I would split it up between my two screens.
Yeah. They do have the
Premiere, you can. Yeah, thank you.
They yeah. do. They do have the. You can move the event window to the second monitor.
Yeah,
and the viewer.
Well, yeah. Like what yeah. I like to do is I would basically put my viewer and master window on my second screen, and then have my bins and timeline on my main screen. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could see that.
I don't know. With I haven't used the most recent update. I also miss. Like I understand like the smart folders and relying on XML data to like organize things, but I like doing things manually and like making folders and manually organizing my content. I wish I had that.
The thing. It Premiere does it exactly how Final Cut Pro used to do previous to version 10. And you know, it is a little easier. You can just drag and drop and create bins and all that, and it works great. It doesn't work that way with 10, and it's different. I don't know, we can play around with it today, but again it's one of those things, because it's a new program, I feel like there's a way to do it, I just don't know it
yet. I figured out a way to do like you can use tags to organize things.
Mm-hmm.
Which essentially you're doing the same thing, it's just a little hard, it's a little more time consuming to attach tags to things to organize it, but then you can put it in multiple folders essentially.
Yes.
Which is nice.
Yeah, I really enjoyed using that.
But regardless, as media professionals, I would say, now that we're out of college and working men, as media professionals working in the industry, it is in our best interest now to diversify ourselves with a bunch of different platforms, applications, and workflows. Learning the Creative Suite is definitely been worth it for me. Being proficient on Mac and PC is required, I think, if we're going to work in the industry that we do.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not people agree on, you know, I don't know. I don't subscribe to the whole my NLE can beat up your NLE. Dad's tougher than your dad.
It's like Mac and PC. Like why, for me, why just have one? Like why not use what benefits you the most?
Exactly.
From either or.
That's
you
why
know.
It's like it's mm-hmm. Mac or PC. Well, it's both. It depends on what you're doing.
They're tools that help you do what you need to do, and you don't need to, you know, take sides and grab
Mac
a javelin.
Or PC.
Yep. It's just taking the time to get the facts and learning about what thing, you know, like the teacher showed you, like, hey, if you actually look at this, let me show you what it can do.
Yeah.
And then you can make the judgment rather than just saying, no, I don't like it.
Yep.
So I got to give, you know, Final Cut Pro credit in trying to change up the stagnating tape-based workflow and trying to push towards something that could really, you know, change not only the speed of edits, but, you know, just mix up workflows and challenge people to think in new ways. I got to give credit there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be very excited to see what other updates that there'll be down the line, 10.2.
Especially with the, as far as the professional atmosphere goes, like with the Mac Pro and Final Cut Pro.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was going to bring that up.
That combination, seeing that, is obviously you don't have the money for it, but
right.
If you did, like that's amazing.
Yeah, the one a video I had shared with all the guys here was a video of these guys. I think it was like it was a mid range Mac Pro, so not even the highest end. So maybe a $5,000, $5,500 version of the Mac Pro, and they had an uncompressed 4K clip from a Red camera, 8:1 compression, and they had 14 intense clips on top of that, playing nonstop. No, no unrendered, no dropped frames, no lag. Just
and they had a Red Rock clip with 18 effects added to it that was playing back in real time.
Wow,
no,
I think it was optimized
with
no drop
frames.
Yeah,
that was a big thing. And it's like looking at that platform, you know, and especially with a program like Final Cut Pro, which the new one thing the 10.1 do that it's not going to do for us, but it does is it optimizes the program also for dual GPU setups like the Mac Pro. And it shows, like, that is an absolutely brilliant piece of engineering.
Which is a drawback if you're buying it to use the Premiere or the Creative Suite, because it uses the CPU. Yeah.
Right. And hopefully they'll do something about that.
The developers have to update the software to make use of the dual GPUs and not rely so much on the CPU.
Yeah. Right.
I think some of the programs do take GPU.
And with that, from my ignorance of doing built PCs, Is there an abundance of possibilities right now to have dual GPU setups from a custom built PC?
Yeah, I can do it.
SLI. Do that for probably about 6 or 7 years.
Okay, I had no idea about that.
It's just can the software take advantage of it? And that's the same with like dual core processors. Is they had to? They're still working on being able to program and code the software to actually do parallel processing to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. So that was all we had for
Final Cut Pro
and workflow stuff.
I wanted to talk about YouTube contact or content ID, which is a new system that YouTube is implementing for, I would say, it's aimed towards larger corporations, specifically publishers that you know, like you have like mainstream pop bands or pop music, or like, you know how there's like lots of videos that people put up and put on music, or let's play videos that will take footage from video games or whatever. So what the publishers do is that they can throw up copies of their content, be it a video game image or music clips or movie clips. They upload to YouTube servers, and they have YouTube has Content ID, which will use those clips as references, and so they will basically look through every single video that is on YouTube and that will become on YouTube and check it against those references, and if any flags pop up, the publisher is immediately known or notified, and that they can take whatever action they want, be it let it go, charge the YouTuber, make money off of it. Wow. through advertising, mm-hmm. or can do whatever.
I even saw an article on Game Informer where they try to reach out to the various game companies, and they're all quite different. You know, one would be like Riot Games, so like League of Legends, they're like, hey, yeah, keep throwing it up, send us a request, we'll approve it right away. And some are, no, we don't want anything. Or, you know, there's Nintendo and all those people that have varying degrees, which is kind of nice that they're leaving it up to the publishers rather than just taking like, this is our stance. This is it. And they're already doing it for music.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So they're just doing it for videos now.
Yeah. But there's a lot of backlash I've been getting or been seeing from a lot of YouTubers though by it. It's because you have the publisher who is this big corporation who can have lawyers who can back up their decision on things. Whereas like, it's like if in the music world, if you want to sample some music, you have your own publishing house that's going to back you into doing that, and the other publishing house where the music had originally belonged, and they'll figure out the whole legal system. But whereas in this situation, you have the small YouTuber who doesn't really probably have any legal background at all, who can't defend themselves. So if they were approached or whatever by another publisher, saying like, this is my, like as a YouTuber, this is my content. I'm just using like 3 seconds of your song, but you have complete domain over whether I can show it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree that they need control over their content though, but if you're really that upset, like don't, first of all, don't use mm-hmm. their songs. Don't make content about it. You're just promoting them for something that you don't like in the first place. Don't buy their games. Stop buying Call of Duty, but people are going to buy it because they like playing it. And so it's just they're whining. I don't know. I take the stance that they're whining about something that they have no rights over or any authority. Yes, you are the consumer, but that gives you the power of buying it or not. And therefore, if you don't like their actions, don't buy it. But some people don't like that.
Free market, bitches.
Well, that's the point. But then you're... Yes, you're penalizing them, but then you're not getting the content. So,
yeah,
I think it's a much bigger discussion that needs to be had, because we're in this. YouTube is the main thing. The main thing I'm looking at here, because of the groups that have made their livelihood off of other people's content. Which, you know, that's sort of in a weird gray space in and of itself. But if
there's a question is that, can they do that or not? Is that right to be able to do?
But at the same time, it has been done forever. There have been plenty of people who make their livelihood out of knowing how to fix computers, out of other people's stuff. If they couldn't have access to someone's computer, like the knowledge base of it, then you couldn't repair other people's computers. So it's slightly different because. Whereas in that point where, you know, someone, they learn how to fix a computer and, you know, if they lose that, they can move on to something else. But if you look at some people, like mainly vloggers or people who do Let's Plays on YouTube, where, you know, they may be like 22-year-old kids, I'll say, people who that's their full-time job. They've been able to make it work that they work. Their full-time job is to make a video and... Maybe they don't have, maybe because they were able to do that, they didn't go to college. They didn't take time didn't put a lot of time and effort into other skill sets because they were able to make a decent living off the bat just by having good commentary and being able to play a video game.
Like streamers and stuff. I mean, aside from YouTube, there's Twitch, and there's plenty of streamers that do Twitch as a profession. They just stream them playing video games and talking to their audience, and you make money from that.
Well, here's an article about Nintendo. They registered with YouTube and their content ID system, so they uploaded all their copyright content. And so it's not saying that you, like here, they're just making money on it now. So you can release a gameplay video and then have that be shared. There's just going to be advertisements, and then they're going to make money.
Which is going to take away from your profit, though.
Yeah. But it's not.
I wonder what that. I wonder how much profit they're taking away from it.
I don't know.
Well, if you also look at like our YouTube videos and see how much profit we make off of advertisements on them.
But like some people make a significant amount of money. I'm questioning like how much does Nintendo take away from the profit that's made from the video. So like there's a video, there's that money for the profit. How much goes to the developer of the game or song or whatever, and how much goes to the YouTuber who made the video?
Yeah. There's already a problem with YouTube itself as far as them being kind of like a publisher, and you're like employed by YouTube basically, because you're already using a service that you have no rights over, that you're not paying for it. You're not,
I know.
You're given free.
It's crazy how it's moved from... it used to be just a site where, hey, everyone uploads videos and just watches home videos and stuff like that. It's moved from that to, like what you're saying, like this publishing company.
Yeah.
It's crazy how it's changed.
You have the Quarter Digital, the Freddie W, like this... Like, they're basically like a TV channel.
But even they're moving away from YouTube, though.
Yeah.
Like, Freddie W is...
That's the thing. Yeah. They should... In order to gain access and rights to their own stuff, and publish themselves.
And then there's even sort of the other middleman in between. There are some people, they get signed on to, other channels. Like, you know, you could sign up with Machinima, and so you get help through Machinima to get your videos out there to get views to them.
They're basically a marketing
machine. Yeah, and then and you know, there's tons of these different channels that like Revision 3. Well, Revision 3 is a little different, but like there's all these other channels that again like they're saying that they help you to get more views, but there's a lot of people that are saying that they haven't seen the increase in content by signing on to one of these larger channels.
And the problem is they should be going, if you're releasing content on YouTube, you should be going into it realizing that basically it's not your stuff. Like there's probably in the copyrights, like, you know, once you upload it, like Facebook and in those images, they have certain rights to it because you're using their servers, their bandwidth. Like they're paying a bunch of money. Obviously they're getting a lot of money back from advertisers because there's a lot of views and people are going to the site because of your content. But
yeah, and it's almost what you need to do if you want to do something there is you either need to go in knowing that and just expecting that for the entire time you're there, or you do what many other people like Freddie W and what even Rooster Teeth now is doing even more publicly, which is they're still putting stuff up there but then trying to push people back to their own site. I noticed like previously a Rooster Teeth video, it just started and then you started watching it, whereas now with their little new opening animation, they say for more videos or for first content, go to roosterteeth.com. Because
that's a nice little carrot to get people to move to their site. Hey, you can watch this first if you go to our website.
You watch, like, because a lot of time for the Let's Plays, even, like, they're uploaded on their website, like, hours earlier.
Yeah. I really think they need their new website update, though, because their current website, I don't like watching videos there. It's not a good video management system.
Yeah, it is.
I go to YouTube to watch
it. And I was expecting to see that update. Yeah. They were saying it was going to be in December.
Yeah, it loads fast. Like, switching to HD doesn't start over the video. Like, just little things. And it, like, YouTube, it tells me I've watched it already. So if there's, like, 10 videos, I can remember
what I've watched. I use YouTube Feather, which is nice. It's very cut down.
And also, I get other video content in the same place, so I can just go to one spot.
For me, I like Red Letter Media. Their website has their videos before YouTube, like 2-3 weeks before, and they have it organized in a nice, clean, relatively clean way that I like. That one gets me to watch on their site before YouTube, but not other sites really. But that one.
So that will be interesting. We'll have to keep track of that and see where that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what Google decides. By the way, I loved their move to combine Google Plus like with YouTube.
Yeah, that's another big.
And some pretty funny, what was it? It was Corridor Digital, or no? It was Brandon Jayla, Freddie W's partner, who did the video where Google Plus was the Eye of Sauron.
There was a whole like backstory, or like it was probably some Reddit thing that I didn't understand. That was about Bob. It was Bob something Bob.
Yeah. Everyone's comment, like in the comments, like Bob has an army and he's gonna destroy Google Plus, copy and paste into every video you see or something like that.
Stupid.
I know, but anyway, we'll see what Google Plus does.
Speaking of Sauron and things related to Tolkien,
hey, segue. this month we saw the
last month
the movie we saw, of course, was The Hobbit: Desolation of Smaug. In keeping with our tradition of the first podcast we saw or did, which was we were talking about the first Hobbit movie. There you go. Yes.
Well, we did talk about it. I think it was before we decided that we were going to do like a movie for each
before
one.
Before the Intersection Movie Club.
Yeah.
Copyright.
we're going to try to keep
Make money off.
We're going to try to keep it spoiler free for everybody. But sorry if we let anything slip. It's been a while.
Came out.
Dumbledore kills Sauron.
What?
I think a month is pretty good.
Yeah,
a lot of time, but
for the actual,
we're gonna try to keep it vague to what's been shown through trailers and whatnot.
So yeah. I'll just kick it off, I guess. I really liked it. I we started off seeing it in the high frame rate 3D, and then I went back and saw it in 2D, regular projection. I actually preferred the 3D high frame rate this time. I just felt more in the action. And it's funny because a big critique I've had of the 3D is that with the glasses, I feel like it dims the picture a lot. But going back and seeing the 2D projection, I didn't feel like it was any brighter. Maybe they just made the 3D projection that much brighter to compensate for it.
Maybe.
But I felt like it was the same. But anyway, no, I thought the 3D high frame rate was great. The only really problem I have with these Hobbit movies is I want Peter Jackson to stay consistent with the story he told in Lord of the Rings, specifically the things that Gandalf uncovers in this movie. I feel are a little too explicit, given that in the Fellowship, he doesn't know what's going on and has to go off on this 17-year journey to search for answers. So that and in keeping with there's like this big timeline in the appendices about like when, for example, Sauron unveils himself in Middle Earth, doesn't happen until after The Hobbit. I'm implying spoilers, whatever. Anyway, that's
So there wasn't a past. Because I thought in The Hobbit they like kind of mentioned like, oh, there's a past battle.
The necromancer?
The one, basically.
Oh, that happens like thousands of years.
Yeah.
Before.
But it did happen. Like,
yeah.
He existed before. Yes. You weren't saying that he never existed until after The Hobbit.
Right.
Know who he was.
Well, no. He probably knew who, but he doesn't really have a reason to suspect what's happening with Sauron, you know what I mean? And even if he does, that's fine, but I don't think they should have referred to him by name. That's the only thing.
Did they?
Yes.
What scene was that?
That was when Gandalf was held up and he was like looking in the eye thing and the silhouette of the fire and he was and he looked, Ian McKellen looked as if he didn't want to say the name, and I'm like, I know, Gandalf, I don't want you to say it either. But I really liked it. What did you guys think?
I liked it.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot more than I did the first Hobbit.
Yeah. I enjoyed the more action.
It flowed better. There was more action. I enjoyed that a little bit more. I thought that in the very beginning of the movie, there's not like a whole lot that Bilbo is doing. And I feel like the whole story about the Hobbit is about Bilbo. And he does.
That's
some
a common
stuff
critique. Yeah. That he doesn't do enough in these movies.
Yeah.
And it's mostly about the side plots, which, you know, I guess is a good point. I would agree with you. I wonder if someone's going to come out with like their own cut of the film where it's like just the scenes with Bilbo and the dwarves and nothing else. That'd be kind of funny because it'd be more sure to the book, I guess.
Sure.
I enjoy I'm all about the universe and like the lore. And so I enjoy the Gandalf stuff and like this necromancer and
happen, by the way.
These things happening rather than just sticking with the perspective of that was my critique of the Hunger Games was,
yes,
you were only in the perspective of the main character, which is a good, it's a common thing to do, but I like to see what else is happening in the world and with the elves, with the dwarves.
And I did like how Gandalf even made the comment, you know, I have to go back and check on those dwarves, they're gonna enter the mountain. And Radagast is like, yeah, but this crap is going down over here. And he's like, oh, dilemma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't talk about it, but there was a cool part I want to talk about. Anyway, the one part that I thought probably could have been different, the fight with the dragon went on a little bit too long, I thought, because the longer that they tried to do their Home Alone shenanigans, I feel like the less threatening he got, you know?
I thought they did an excellent job with Smaug, just with his character. I loved the... Because I don't really remember the book. I read it a long time ago. But from talking to people, like, that riddle game, I think that he did a little bit more with him, but
yes.
I like the toying that he did with him. The
you're playing with your food,
like,
before you eat it.
Like Bilbo thought he had an upper hand of, you know,
yeah,
talking to him in certain ways, which is what you're supposed to do because they have a lot of ego. You're supposed to praise the dragon and stuff like that, which they didn't really mention in the movie, like that.
Oh, sure.
But in the book, they like the dwarves told him or something, like
hey, I don't think
keep
so.
Talking to him.
I don't think so. Like, if I remember correctly from the I read the book about at this point, after the like, I think it's sort of in an aside,
just
saying everybody knows that you must.
I remember Gunnar told me he was just talking in his head as he was doing it, explaining why he was doing it to himself. That's what occurred in the book. So you can, I think they should have mentioned something like the dwarf, like, talk to make sure you make them feel good.
I will say that that dragon was really, really cool and actually scary, I thought, yeah. Especially with the 3D. Like, it was a threatening villain.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting how they depicted him, though, because in the book, and as far as how Tolkien describes dragons, I mean, this is getting a little nitpicky, I suppose, but like, dragons are supposed to be four-legged and have wings, whereas Smaug is two-legged and has wings.
He's a wyvern.
But he's supposed to be a dragon.
Yeah, that's what I've been styled as, a wyvern.
Yeah, I think the cartoon version of The Hobbit, which I've seen a few times, he does have mm-hmm. four legs mm-hmm. and then separate wings, where, mm-hmm. yeah, this is... His wings are also hands.
Well,
yeah.
I think this dragon version, though, is much more
menacing.
Americanized,
oh, okay.
You could say. So it's a much more appropriate. The audience is going to
sure.
familiarize themselves rather than, let's say, like a Chinese dragon, which is like long and slender and has like eight legs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No. Four. Do they even have wings?
Nope. Yeah. They just
so slack, they can so just. There's a lot of different versions.
Chinese and,
so.
And Japanese dragons are almost the same with that.
Don't say they are the same. You're going to offend people.
I said almost the same. I'll offend myself if I... Well, please.
But what did you guys think of CGI in this movie? Was it...
Don't I get a reaction?
Oh, sorry.
Just gonna, is that we'll really what up. You think of my... Well, there was a nice conversation
okay,
going
go,
on.
Go,
I didn't
go,
want to
go,
break
go,
it.
Go.
I liked it, but I didn't like it.
Ha!
And okay. I know, I've
that's
noticed.
Good. You're done, right?
Shut up. I've noticed. I don't know. Thinking back on some of our previous movie club things, I don't know if I'm becoming like super cynical and jaded towards film. I've noticed I've had a lot of negative reactions to films lately.
Usually, if you know
but,
more, you become more cynical.
Yeah, the curse of knowledge, as I say.
I think people hold these movies to a different standard. Like after The Lord of the Rings, I think mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, like I'm finding like the more and more I think about it, and also my girlfriend also doesn't particularly care for them either. And I think the more that they've been thinking about it, the more I like get sort of disappointed by various things. Like, well, it was this will segue into the like CG and stuff. Like, I'm disappointed with just the overabundance of CG. It's just bothering
yeah,
me a lot.
It bothers me yeah. tremendously. Like, the whole scene where Bilbo goes up on top of the trees or whatever,
yeah.
and, like, looks out to the horizon, that's all CGI. That's not the beauty of New Zealand, the beauty of something that's, like, real. That I loved.
I didn't think that was that bad.
That didn't
Do you know what CG?
Didn't look, yeah.
Yeah, there's behind, it's, there's it's behind the scenes screen. It's also on okay. green screen.
But, I mean, yeah, you have a point. I do, like, when I go back and watch The Fellowship, and that scene where Boromir's fighting off the orcs and Lurtz comes over with the bow, oh, God, the real prosthetic, actual live living person is just so much more scary to me than the white orc in this movie. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah.
No, I agree.
Lee, you were going to make a counterpoint?
I just disagree. I didn't like the prosthetics because I can see that. That's what they are, and it's just a guy with muscles that he can't move, and he can only make one expression. So
angry.
to be fair,
orcs aren't that dynamic emotionally. Yeah. So
how do you know? Like, but they can still
they're
have
people
a,
too.
Like, change their face.
Yeah. No, they're not. They're orcs.
Did you make a comment that the 3D high frame rate made it easier to discern the CGI? From the live action stuff?
A little bit. Because everything's a little more clear, not just blurry. So
yeah.
you can't get away. To me that's what like the fight scenes, like when you're just like missing them, like pretending hitting, like when it's the higher frame rate, you get more frames in between, so it's you can see the detail a little bit more, I think. But
yeah. And the other thing that you know what I mean, like there's sort of the I don't know, the Peter Jackson shot where like it will like start like looking like when Gandalf is walking through Dol Guldur, it's on Gandalf and then the camera, as if it's on like a super helicopter frame, it pulls back and like it loops around and
yeah.
it turns sideways. And I felt like that happened like seven times in
yeah.
the film, and
I
got
I would say it's happening again. Yeah, I would say
okay.
there's definitely some things Peter Jackson does that I disagree or don't like. Especially he'd couple things in like King Kong, his movie.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things going on with that film.
Well, yeah, but he has a specific style that I don't think is very. It's not a blockbuster like style
yes.
or that's common to what people expect from movies, which is good. But
can I also say, hopefully this isn't too spoilery, we get it, Peter Jackson. Orlando Bloom can slide on things like skateboards. Can we please stop?
You know what?
I think that was a little over the top.
Really overdone. He was sliding on like an orc's dead body.
Yeah, but
like bodies don't slide that well. I'm sorry.
I will grant that this trilogy is gonna be a little more fairy tale esque, a little more fantastical than Lord of the Rings, because that just is what, you know, I would think of it. But I guess now Legolas can do anything. He can shoot 500 orcs in the face in 3 seconds and
never run out of arrows.
And never run out of arrows, which is
Picks them up while he slides around.
But it's like in the end of Fellowship when they're trying to hold off, you know, maybe 200 orcs, and he's shooting, you know, an arrow every 3 seconds. That was really cool. He's like, whoosh, whoosh, you know, because you could actually see him do it in a nice wide, you know, full long shot.
And then he runs out of arrows and he pulls out his knives. Yeah. And then he starts cutting things.
As opposed to this movie where, you know, it's all, you know, close, fast.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They added in there for just fun action.
The like, barrel
cause,
thing?
Because the barrel thing in the books, they just get away.
The barrel thing.
There's no chase scene.
Why the hell was there a GoPro in the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I hated that with the going underwater thing.
Well,
yeah.
Even more so, it seemed like they were grain. Like, the two different shots were had different color correction, different film grain.
Well, you can't get the same image.
Yeah, definitely GoPro. Definitely wasn't a red raw 4K image whatever he shot at.
One thing that bothered me, the fat guy,
Bomber.
When he gets out and fights, they're all in barrels, and even, like, Bilbo doesn't have a barrel he's in his barrel, he gets out, fights, breaks it, and then immediately jumps back into the river into a barrel.
Yep.
did that bother anybody else?
It seemed a little...
Like, where'd that barrel come from?
Wasn't he sharing it with someone else?
No, he wasn't. And to be fair, like, is a possibility. I didn't count. There were a ton of barrels there if there were more than they needed, so just a bunch went. But that did bother me. I did notice that,
too. Because Bilbo didn't have a barrel. No. He was just hanging on with somebody. Like, why didn't they put him in one of the extras?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Asking too many questions.
It was just something that
you weren't in the moment.
It was too quick. It's just like, okay, you have all these elves like jumping around.
Two elves.
Like, no, there was more. Like,
in the beginning. Oh, I mean, further down towards the
end. But all this crazy stuff, and then
you have
an extra barrel.
No, I didn't think of that. Also, why the hell can orcs suddenly run around in daylight? Wasn't their thing is they can only move at night? Because in the Fellowship...
Well, there's different types.
But in the Fellowship, when Saruman was like breeding the Uruk-hai, the whole thing was, hey, these new breed of super orcs can run around in the daylight.
Mm-hmm.
They're like super like strong orcs that can run... Like, I don't know. I feel like that should
I didn't even think about that until you mentioned it now.
But... Yeah. Even though they can, going back to Lee's earlier point in an earlier podcast, like, I don't care that they do that. I just want it to be addressed. Like, tell me why they can do that, because it's inconsistent with the world that Peter Jackson has already made.
That's SPF 50.
SPF 9000. No, I don't care. Peter Jackson can do whatever he wants as long as it's consistent with what he's already done. So, I don't know. But, again, a lot of people like to nitpick these Hobbit movies because I think after The Lord of the Rings came out, you know, everyone was amazed by what he was able to do, that I think now the bar is this high and we hold these movies to a new standard.
That's what I was going to mention too. It's also the time that they get released in, like the atmosphere of similar to like Star Wars. Like when it was released, you know, doesn't matter the quality of the movie or the story, like it had a certain feeling about it and the universe that it was, like people were amazed by it and like this is something new that we haven't seen before. And that's, I think, to me, that's what Lord of the Rings was when it came out. Was it was something new, it was something they hadn't seen before. And now it's all over the place.
I definitely feel like Lord of the Rings spawned that kind of epic battle kind of movie.
It does have the most there was this list I was found on Reddit of the most amount of dead bodies or of deaths in a movie.
On screen deaths,
and it is Return of the King.
Like 900.
Yeah, it's
which, in my opinion, to me, that sounded way too low. Because yeah. like the army of Sauron is like
when the ghosts come over and just like mow down,
decimate.
Like, they're just
maybe
like
they're just counting hundreds, like close ones you can see. Yeah. I don't know.
So that even seemed low. It's like there's all the ones that like get plowed over by the Mummikill.
Yeah.
Like, there seem to be more.
How many years? I forget. How many years were in between the Lord of the Rings movies?
60. Wait. No. Sorry. Lord of the Rings movies.
Yes. In between like Fellowship to
well, it was 2001.
One year. Just 2001, 2002, 2003.
Yeah, every year. Sorry. I was anticipating your question and failed miserably.
I was saying there was at least 2 years between the two between the movies, but maybe I was wrong.
Because I think with the older movies, if we viewed them with the same scrutiny as we did now, there would be tons of things that we don't like. Mm-hmm. Like one I can remember is that bothered me was the steward of Gondor when he gets on fire.
And then runs
like 2 miles to jump off, like just to get that shot of him falling. Like,
that's
just like, come on.
That's analogous to what we've seen in the Hobbit movies, is like things that look cool but don't make sense, you know?
Yeah.
So, but you know, even when watching Lord of the Rings, in specifically the Two Towers and Return of the King, after I'd read the books, there were things in the movies that I just did not like, but they were great movies nonetheless, and so that's how I kind of treat these Hobbit films.
And it is a middle film too, like when it ended I was like, I forgot, like, oh yeah, this is gonna end with finishing, like, yeah. I was like,
I love that ending too.
I was like, oh, they're gonna go to Lake Town again. I was like, oh, how are they gonna fit Lake Town
was really cool. I liked Lake Town.
I like the one actor that was in Immortals.
Who?
He's the guy that smuggles.
Bard.
Oh, the Bard.
Yeah.
Bard.
I like that actor.
I love Stephen Fry too, the Master.
Yeah.
He's really cool.
And Stephen Colbert is in it too.
As a spy.
Yeah.
But you don't see his face, but he's in it. I don't know. I really liked
how can you be in it but not see your
Well, I just didn't. Well, because all the spies that are spying on the Bard as he's walking home, you don't like see their face. They're just kind of like hooded and stuff.
Oh, okay.
His name was in the credits.
Gotcha.
But I don't know. I just really liked how you know Peter Jackson creates these towns, these cultures. You know,
it's like
they feel like living places.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I entirely agree.
It's like Minas Tirith, you know, Edoras, the Shire. They all feel like these real living, breathing places, and that you know that's hard to do. And I appreciate that. That's cool.
Like that's why BioShock Infinite, like the creator, like talks about is creating the culture around the story to strengthen it.
Yeah.
So I think we can move to
the big question.
Kind of finish off with 2003 as a whole.
2013?
Yeah, sorry, 2013.
What decade are you living in?
I don't know. Time's moving fast. What is do we just want to say what our favorite movie was of the year? Or we probably don't even know.
I don't even know. When I look
the worst movie.
We're looking
the worst.
That might
Sharknado.
Be a
medical.
Well, we can say... having here, I don't know if this is accurate because it's wiki, but Iron Man 3 was the most as far as gross at 1.2 million, followed by Despicable Me 2. Gotta love all those kids movies.
I mean,
that
I can
go to.
I can say my favorite film of the year if you guys can.
If I'll go for it.
I'll show you if you show me. Okay, I Gravity was my favorite film of the year.
I would agree with you.
The experience, the 3D, the whole experience of the film was definitely worth seeing twice, and that was the most impacting film that I saw this year.
I'm gonna agree with you on that.
I am hesitant to agree because today I'm gonna be seeing Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Granted, that did come out
is not this year.
Yeah. It came out in 2013.
Oh, damn it! On Christmas Day, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
I have yet to see that movie.
I suppose like the best movies I've seen in 2013, I would probably agree. Gravity.
David.
Well, I'll also throw out there for your food for thought that Star Trek also came out last year.
Yeah, I liked Gravity more than I did Star Trek.
I didn't like it, so it's fine. I'm looking through the other things, just trying to remind myself what all came out.
Did you not like Star Trek because the engine wasn't?
The engine. Okay, do you want me to get back
into
this
conversation? No.
I'll tell you why I didn't like it.
Say for anyone listening, David didn't like the engine, the core reactor thing, because
he's
it's not
the warp core.
The warp
it's
core.
Not how it works.
Okay, yeah, it's not designed right.
Just like
you
guys.
No, we're not.
I'm going to explain this the right. Just like you guys, like you want the X explanation of why things work in the world. The warp cores work a certain way in the world, and they need to work about, that way consistently.
You're talking about a fictional piece of technology.
Yeah, and you're talking about a fantasy film, so get off my back.
Oh, jeez.
looking down the list that's here, I would have to say my first choice, I would probably agree, is gravity.
Yeah, for me, it's like the overall experience.
Yeah.
Like
my number two
points is gravity.
My number two pick would be Saving Mr. Banks.
I don't know if I watched
it. I saw that one. That one is really good.
Oh, you did see it.
I did see that. I saw that when I was home. That's the one about Walt Disney and
Mary Poppins, or the author from Mary Poppins, right?
And and that thing, and it was a great movie. And I also really love Mary Poppins.
What film is that the film they're making in this movie? Is it Mary Poppins? Aren't they like making a
movie? Well, he's trying to convince her to let him make a movie about it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And it picks up, like, because he's been trying to get the rights for, like, in real life, like, it took him like 25 years to get the rights, 25 years of talking and whatnot. And this sort of picks up at the very end of that story, until like sort of the final push to try to make
guys,
it.
I'm sorry, I have to change my vote. Anchorman 2.
Oh, that's right.
Legend continues.
I didn't
see the first one.
Alicia wanted to see that, but I was like, let's see American Hustle instead.
That was good. Ooh, I saw that.
It was interesting.
Yeah, you know what? Movies like that aren't necessarily my cup of tea, but the acting was really good. Yeah. And, you know, it was an interesting movie. Can we just talk about how the 47 Ronin is going to be a terrible, terrible movie?
And can I also say how my dad, because like it's based on a true story.
Right.
And how the true story is so much better than the trailer.
You know what?
Why did you need to make it about snakes and flying demon things when the original story, if you make it a drama action piece, would have been fantastic?
I feel like if they would have used an actual Japanese person and not Keanu Reeves, it would have been a much more enjoyable film. I haven't seen it, but I just imagine. And why, yeah. if he's sold as a slave, sold as a slave as a child, why does he know perfect American English and not Japanese?
I guess I'll have to watch the movie.
You know more about the movie than I do.
Looks like crap. Don't go near it. There's our professional tidbit of advice for today. Don't go near 47 Ronin.
It's funny. Keanu Reeves was on the Colbert Report to promote the movie. And Colbert was like, all right, we're going to give you a little acting test. And he's like, all right, show me sad. You just lost your cell phone. And then show me happy. You just found your cell phone. And he's just like the same expression. I mean, it makes sense for The Matrix because Neo is kind of standoffish, shy. You know, he lives behind a computer.
Yeah, I don't like his acting in The Matrix either. But I can't envision anybody.
Well, I mean, maybe it's because I was young when I saw it, but I thought it fit. But anything else, not so much. But anyway.
Well, I said, Gravity. I think that's our consensus.
Mm-hmm. Top Gun 3D came out.
So did Jurassic Park 3D. There was a lot of 3D. When I was flipping through this list, there's a lot of 3D re-releases that didn't even know happened.
Texas Chainsaw.
And can I? Also another funny comment. I think I mentioned this last time about The Hobbit, and with The Hobbit, the budget for the films is approximately $600,000, which is a huge amount of money, about $200,000 per film. And it amuses me that like the first movie grossed like 1.2 billion and the current one is I think right around 700 million worldwide. And it's like the next movie could be they could make no money off the like if nobody went to see the third Hobbit movie and Warner Brothers would still be in the black and they wouldn't care.
Yeah,
like they're paid and done. They don't care. Yeah.
Oddly enough, that is exactly how a lot of studios think, like, hey, make this movie, it's not gonna, like Jack and Jill, inflate the budget and just pay all your friends, Adam Sandler, and
another great movie I forgot about, it was Kick-Ass 2. I really enjoyed that.
I saw the first one. I loved it. I haven't seen the second one.
A lot of people say the second one doesn't have the same whatever.
It's more ridiculous, but I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought it was a good movie. I thought it was a good sequel,
especially with the.
We forgot about the Croods.
Was she Russian? The Russian lady or German?
Mother Russia. No, the villain. And I know we talked a little bit about Kick-Ass 2. In a previous podcast, but I don't know, the kid, the
motherfucker
villain. Yeah, it's so funny because he kills his mom. I'm the motherfucker.
That's right. We had Man of Steel this year too.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
I enjoyed that.
Didn't like it.
No,
no. There's some.
You don't like anything, David.
I know. That's what I said.
Stop watching movies.
I'm just a cynical bastard.
Might as well give up.
My apologies, everyone.
Just give up.
We are classified as explicit, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm a cynical bastard. So I'm sorry
about
that.
Wait till now.
I've already been swearing through this podcast.
Anyway, so I'm betting Gravity's going to walk away with at least one Academy Award this year.
It has to at least Gravity this year.
Yep, and that's coming up in February. So you can definitely expect that in February's podcast we'll be talking a lot more about our expectations for the Oscars, and then
which is on my birthday. Nice.
Yeah, so you can come to my house for a party.
You can come here.
Are you sure they want to come? I mean, they might not want to come because you still haven't given them their winning prize from us.
I forgot.
You owe me two birthday presents.
All right, so that's probably gonna do it for this month. Thanks for tuning in, and
we'll see you next month.